Somebody has texted, bring on Dr. Duffy. He's the best.
Yep, agreed.
So let's do that, Bill.
Agreed.
Clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting, relationship expert, host of the podcast called Better with his wife, Julie Duffy. This is Dr. John Duffy in the studio. Hello again, sir.
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
You're going to have to do less things, John, because by the time we get to your credits, we're almost out of time to talk to you about anything. So please start doing less.
I'm going to do way less from here on out. Thank you.
I'm glad you're on a different day. Usually you're on every other Wednesday with us. You're on Tuesday today because of scheduling things, and maybe somebody who only listens on Tuesday will now hear you.
How fun would that be?
It would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of mental illness out there. I am happy that people are becoming less afraid to talk about it.
Yes.
And perhaps you have a family member, a friend, or who you notice having some issues. And a lot of times people will text or call, how do I get my kid help? How do you approach this?
So people have been asking me this lately. So apparently this is, you know, on people's radar. And the first thing, so I've asked people who I treat, you know, what would you want people to do that they're not doing? And most people say, well, do something. Don't just blow me off. If you're used to talking to me, come and talk to me. Ask me how I'm doing. You know, don't ignore me. And if you think I'm having a hard time, you can ask. That's okay. It's okay to ask, like, hey, is everything okay? I noticed you seem different. And that might spurn something in me that makes me want to talk about it. So,
but John, I sometimes hear the opposite, which is if somebody's suffering from any kind of mental illness, that one of the worst things you could do is ask how they are. Do you see any truth to that?
I actually see it changing over time.
Yeah.
So I think if we were sitting here a decade ago, I would have said that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because people wanted to hide it, basically?
Yeah.
Is that why?
I think it was a little mortifying. But now that the stigma is being lifted a little bit, I think people are more and more open to talking about it and want to get it out, want to talk a little bit about what's going on. Yeah.
Can I just throw something out there? I went to see Maria Bamford, who we both adore. She's an amazing stand-up comic. She has been hospitalized. She's been in an institution.
Yeah.
She suffers from bipolar. And 5 minutes into her set when she opened up at the Den Theater, she's like, anybody in the audience have a therapist? I'm telling you, everybody clapped.
I'm sure that's so great.
10 or 15 years ago, there'd be a smattering here and there.
And most people who had therapists would not move, right? Would be just mortified to be asked. So I love the change in tide. And you ask a really good question, like, really, do people really want to talk about this? Now, I think by and large, they do.
What changed?
I think that now with social media and all the data that's available about mental illness and celebrities coming out saying, hey, I suffer, you know, people like The Rock and Ariana Grande, people you wouldn't necessarily expect are saying, oh, yeah, I have depression or I have anxiety or I've got bipolar disorder. Pete Davidson on Saturday Night Live, you know, is willing to go out there and really make pretty funny bits about it, you know?
So the climate's struggling, John, says, wow, if The Rock, if Ariana Grande, if Pete Davidson, if they could admit that they have trouble and they're seeking help, why can't I?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. Yes.
Will you explain to people listening in this day and age, and I'm hoping everybody knows this by now, we all have a bit of anxiety in us. Part of my anxiety keeps me going every day. You know, I got to get there. It's traffic. We all have moments of depression. But when someone suffers from a diagnosis of anxiety and depression, it's not necessarily that they're just worried and sad. This is deeper than that.
Yes. So there's a difference between I'm having an anxious day or I'm having a depressive day or something happened and circumstantially I'm reacting to something and a diagnosable disorder. And the difference really has to do with the level of functioning. How disruptive is this to your day and to your life on an ordinary basis? So people with an anxiety disorder like panic disorder, OCD, generalized anxiety disorder tend to have deep disruption in the functioning of their day-to-day life. And that's different than somebody who is just having a hard day or taking a test that's particularly difficult or has a job interview or something like that.
That has a reason, a circumstance
that drives it.
And that's normal for all of us.
Absolutely. And even, you know, diagnosable anxiety or depression is not altogether unusual. I mean, there's an argument to say that most of us suffer this at least some point in our lives. You know what I mean? So the idea that this ought to be stigmatized or marginalized in any way is kind of folly now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since this started out talking about how best to deal with a family or a friend who's suffering from some sort of mental illness, how do we know where to draw the line where we've asked too much?
Yeah.
Because we don't want to ask too. We're interested and we want to help, but we don't want to do too much or ask too much.
I think the inclination is to presume that the person we're talking to is super fragile. And is not going to be okay if we ask the next question. What I do in therapy is I'll ask, you know, I'm inclined to ask you this next question. Are you okay with that? And you don't have to answer it, you know? So asking permission and kind of being meta kind of about the discussion gives you permission to ask just about anything as long as you say, you don't have to answer this.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can be pretty casual about it, especially if this is somebody you're close to. You can say, you know, like, I get that this might be hard to talk about, so, you know, I'm curious. But
I've done that with guests on the show, John, where if I feel a question might be going over the line, I'll say, I'm going to ask it, and if you don't want to answer it, I understand.
Yeah.
But here's the question I'm wondering.
Right.
I've done it in real life, and I've done it with guests on the show, because that does give them an out if they're not comfortable.
It gives us all permission, right, to kind of like be curious and let somebody know, hey, I care about you, but you don't have to go here either.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And if you ever want to, I'm available for you.
I have an acquaintance who called me and said that I'm going through a tough time, and I'm really struggling here, and I really think I need to talk to someone. And I said, okay, I will help you find someone. And by the end of the conversation, they're like, I'm going to just see if it gets better. Thank you. If I need you, I'll call you back. And I said, the phone's always available. Please call me or come by if you need to talk to me. But they called asking for help, and then they changed their mind.
Right.
Why?
You know, sometimes I think just it feels better just to talk about it, even with a friend or something. And you feel like, oh, maybe that's all I need. Maybe, you know, you've just lifted it, Wendy. You're a really good listener, and I got to talk it through with you, and I feel better already. I'm good. I'll keep the idea in mind, but, you know, for now, I'm good. My bias in situations like that is to press a little bit and say, well, there's really no downside in going and talking to somebody anyway.
Right.
So you may as well just go ahead and do it.
And where does somebody start? Where do you find someone? I mean, I know if you're lucky enough to have insurance and mental health is covered on it, you can always go to the directory, but there's not, you don't know that person. You don't know if you're going to click with them. What's the best way to find someone?
So my favorite way is word of mouth, to talk to friends, family, school social workers, if it's one of your kids, and ask them, like, hey, who around here works with this particular situation, with this population and this age, you know, somebody who's an expert in this area. But also your primary care physician, if you, you know, are anxious about talking to somebody and making it personal. Psychology Today also has a website, and they vet really effectively vet therapists for being efficient and effective and getting good reviews. And so if you were anxious about talking to anybody about it, you could at least go to the Psychology Today website, and by area code, they'll help you find a therapist.
There's a call, somebody who needs some help, John. Julie's on the line. Julie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, go ahead. Dr. John Duffy is here for you. Go ahead.
Hi, we have an 18-year-old boy who has a history of depression and anxiety and pretty severe ADHD. He's in an alternative school. He is a senior and is flunking out of school. He just absolutely refuses to do his homework. He has got a DUI about 2 months ago. He is not allowed to move out of the state. We have been planning to move out of the state forever, have sold our house. You know, we have to go, and he has to stay here. He's stuck, and I've been looking for resources for him. It's on and on, and nobody will help unless he's homeless. And so we're sitting back and waiting, and it's tragic. It's so hard.
Oh, so hard. Hey, Julie, first of all, I want to give you guys credit for, obviously you've been at this for a while with your son, and he's got multiple complicating diagnoses, and the fact that he's already in an alternative school, I can tell you're doing a lot of the right things, but I get the fact that you've got to go and he's got to stay. There's a couple thoughts I'll offer to you, and maybe to him, to look into the Medicaid program in the state of Illinois, which is getting a little bit better these days, especially with regards to mental health. And in your area somewhere, And you can Google this with your area code as well, with your zip code. There is a community mental health center somewhere. And my bias would be to stop in and talk to some of the therapists or social workers there, and they will help you brainstorm solutions. Because I guarantee you there are solutions. This is just a really tricky situation, and I can feel that anxiety that, oh, man, I think our family has fallen through the cracks here. But there are answers. We just have to be kind of vigilant in seeking them out.
Okay, so when you say community health center, do you mean, we live in Lake County, so do you mean like the Lake County Health Department, or what is that?
Yeah, so I would reach out to the Lake County Health Department, and underneath that department, they'll have a Department of Health and Human Services, and so you want to talk to somebody within that department, and they will help you find at least a starting point for where to go next.
Right.
And this might be a frustrating process, but I've worked with other families in similar situations, and there are solutions here.
There is a Lake County Health Department and a Community Health Center, which might be the place at least to start.
Yep.
Julie, I have to say continued success, because you're a great mom, and I know a lot of people judge parents by what's going on with their children, and know you are doing everything that you possibly can to help them, and you're not stopping at all.
Seriously.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Good luck with this, Julie.
All right.
We will take it. That's tough. That's a tough situation.
It really is.
We'll take a break. More with Dr. John Duffy in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. 312-981-7200. We are talking with psychologist Dr. John Duffy. And we have another question from a listener. What is your name? Eileen?
Yes.
Hi, Eileen. Dr. Duffy is here with us.
Hi. I just have a question. My son was diagnosed with anxiety and depression this last fall, and the problem is we're having a problem with him and his lying. He lies about everything and anything to us, and I just didn't know if this is part of the disease or another thing altogether.
Yeah, that's a fair question, and it's part of how old is your son, Eileen?
22.
Yeah, so part of it is the age, but it's also part of being anxious and depressed, especially for young men. And what we tend to do is focus on the behavior and want to come up with consequences and punishments for the behavior. The bigger question, if you can take a step back for a moment, I work with a lot of young men who end up lying to their parents about various things. And think about for just a moment what it's like to be your son. So if he is lying at 22 years old, right, he's an adult, there is something that he is deeply unhappy about in his life and probably ashamed of. So my bias would be to try to target that. So instead of focusing on the lying behavior, see if you can get him to talk a little bit about what it's like to be him. Like, you can note, like, hey, we see that you're not being honest with us all the time. What's that about? You know, what drives that in you? And see if you can't draw that out of him. And the way to do that most effectively, I find, is to take the accusation out of it and go at it from a curious point of view. Not that you shouldn't have a consequence for your guy if he's lying, especially if he's in your house. But at some point, you want to get down to the root of this and what this is really about, because it's not really about lying.
Okay. And is that's just something I should work on with him, or is that something he should be talking to someone about?
Ideally, it sounds like if he has anxiety and depression and he's not functioning very well, in other words, he's not out in the world and he's not thriving, my strong bias would be to find a qualified therapist that works with young men. And I wouldn't wait to do that. If you're close to him and he's doing okay in life, then I would have that conversation with him on your own.
Okay, great.
And it's hard to leave the emotion out of it, Eileen. You know, you're a mom. You want to go, what in God's name are you thinking?
Yes.
It's hard to be, you know, I'm not saying a friend, but even to just say, you know, hey, talk to me. What's going on here? Because that change of attitude, maybe you'll get more out of him. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck, Eileen.
I'm curious, you said that this situation with the lying is predominantly a male part of the equation. Why? What's different with guys than girls in this particular instance?
At young ages, guys are terrible communicators by and large. Or certainly not the communicators that young women are. There are exceptions, but by and large, if I get a 22-year-old woman, young woman on the couch. I'm not going to say much. She is going to take the lead, and she is going to talk to me about what's going on emotionally and what's going on pragmatically in her life. If I get a 22-year-old guy, I've got to draw him out. I've got to make it feel like it's okay to be in therapy. This
right.
isn't a weakness on your part. And then I've got to draw out, like, what's the story underneath the story? Because guys are really good at talking about, like, here's what happened. I lost my job, right?
Yeah, right.
But to talk about the emotional underpinnings, we're not necessarily brought up as guys and men to have the language for that. And so I kind of find that I have to teach guys in real time the language
That's
for talking about their emotions. Yeah.
Men are just more guarded in terms of that sort of thing.
Way more guarded.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about it. You get together with your friends. You're a little different, I have to say. But most guys will just talk about guy things. Girls get together and they're like, oh, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
We really open up.
Yeah. And guys are getting better at this, but still, the divide is pretty broad.
I have to ask you a question. About a week ago, I told a story on the air, and one after another, every texter said, you need to run this by John Duffy and find out what this means.
We're do you want to do time. This after news?
Only if you can stay. If not, we'll do it the next time you're here.
Oh, I can
stay. Are you okay? For a little bit?
Absolutely.
All right.
All right. Real quickly, though, right. Dr. Duffy, have depression. Do I see a counselor or psychiatrist?
I would start with a counselor, and that counselor will be able to, if they're a qualified therapist, and I would make sure they are, they will be able to guide you to whether you need psychopharmacology, whether you need a psychiatrist, or whether you can work through this through cognitive behavioral therapy.
And how do I get a hold of Dr. Duffy? Phone number, email, where can I talk to him to get help?
You can email me at johngduffy@drjohnduffy.com, and everything about me is on that website as well.
You can stay for another quick 10 or 15 minutes. All right. John Duffy's going to stay. I'm going to share a story that's very peculiar, and we need your take on it to help us understand what it could possibly mean.
I'm dying to know what this is.
You were off this day. We talked about it last Wednesday when you were off. It's very strange. All right. That's coming up right after the news. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy has agreed grudgingly to stay with us.
This is a bigger copay we owe him. We're
yes,
going to have
we
to
do.
Pitch in.
That's all right. That's all right. John, here's the situation. Now, this is a story I talked about on Wednesday. Wendy was off on Wednesday. Dane Neal was here. And during the bonus hour, I told the story. And I can't tell you how many people texted in saying, if you don't tell the story to John and find out what it means, you're doing a disservice. So here's what it is.
All right.
Not this past weekend, but 2 weekends ago, I woke up on Saturday and the weather was very, very nice outside. And I said to myself, you know what I need to do this year? I've been telling myself I'm going to do this every single year for I don't know how long. I'm going to go back to those tennis courts that I used to play at, my all-time favorite tennis courts. I'm going to go back and play there because I love that place. That place is it's like heaven to me. Everything about it, I would ride my bike there. There was a special path that I would take to these courts. The courts were perfectly manicured. The people there were so friendly. Sometimes I would go, like if one of my friends couldn't play with me, there was always somebody who needed a guy to either play singles or doubles. Everybody was just a fun player, a nice guy.
Yeah.
The thing I remember most about it is that when I would play there at night, you know how if you look up at lights at night, there's always bugs all over the place?
Oh, yeah.
No bugs. And I would always say to the guys that I was playing with, what's going on? There's never bugs here. And they would laugh and they go, no, the courts are too nice. Bugs don't even want to come here. It's too perfect.
It's just idyllic. It's perfect even to that degree.
Yes. Right? So I said, it's ridiculous that I didn't play there last year. I don't think I played there the year before, but this year I'm going to take that bike ride there because it's such a fun ride there and stuff like that. Then as the day went on, I thought, you know, I can't remember the last time I even played there. It wasn't last year. It wasn't 2 years ago. It wasn't 3 years ago. It wasn't when my daughters were little. It wasn't when we lived in our old apartment, just my wife and I. It wasn't when I was in college, and I realized that court doesn't exist.
Wow.
This thing that every year, as the weather gets nice, I say to myself, I've got to go back and play in my all-time favorite place. I made that place up.
No
it doesn't
kidding.
Exist.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Why did I do that?
So this is one of my favorite things about the human mind is that we can create these memories that from childhood, right? And I think you're describing something from a long time ago, right?
Oh, as I thought back about it, I'd had these same dreams of this place in college, in high school, when I started playing more competitively, but I was never there. So
right,
yes.
Right. So I think we tend to aggregate sometimes the best of our memories around a certain circumstance, maybe tennis, right? Because this was a big part of your growing up, and
sure.
and create the ultimate scenario to remember. I work with a lot of people who will describe something just that way and say, it's not a real thing, but I remember it and it's visceral. I remember it and it feels so very real. And I think that's just this wish fulfillment that our mind creates for us as a kind of a little, like, almost a cinematic gift to your psyche.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you were a film student.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's true.
Right. Yeah. So you're able to go back and kind of find peace in this place that never really existed, right? It might be an aggregate of several places, or it might be something you manufactured altogether as the ideal place for you to be, right? This kind of like nirvana for you.
My wife said, that's your heaven. She goes, you're describing your heaven.
Yeah.
And I go, I guess so. And a caller texted in, because we had also been talking about the new Twilight Zone that's on TV. There's an episode of Twilight Zone called Next Stop Willoughby or Last Stop Willoughby about a guy on a train who looks out when his train is stopped at this town of Willoughby, and every time he looks at the window goes, that's the perfect place to live. I want to live in Willoughby. And it has a weird twist ending, of course.
I know the ending. I know the ending. Yeah, oh, it's the most chilling episode ever seen. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, right. Without giving away the punchline, in a similar way, some places that you feel like are idyllic or perfect don't exist. Some situations that we reflect back on in our lives as perfect probably weren't, right? A memory of, like, my father passed away 20 years ago, and I have these fond memories of these road trips down to Florida. Half the time, if I'm being realistic, we were arguing in the car.
Sure,
I was driving too fast. But that part fades away so easily when I think, like, yeah, I got a picture of him next to the Studebaker, and he was so happy to be standing next to this car.
Yeah.
And that's the part that seemed to last a week. You know what I mean? So I think our minds consolidate things and protect the good stuff, especially when we've had some negative stuff happen in our lives.
That's when, Bill, this happens a lot in the news where somebody will get the last word in an obituary, like someone has died. You kind of giggle at that when somebody goes, this was the worst person ever. And I feel that, you know, they should have a fine send-off, because you do have a lot of anger issues with your parents. We all did. And
right.
Do, but I mean, when push comes to shove and you think back about it, they're kind of, even though they weren't great memories, you make them great memories. And I just feel like people will regret on that obituary saying he was an SOB and worst person ever.
No, and in the wake of a loss, what we tend to do is look for the very best of the memories,
yes.
Right? You know, even if they're spare, right? You know, I've worked with people whose parents were terrible to them. When their parents passed, they're like, oh man,
Saints.
I remember this one time when I transferred schools. My mom was so supportive of that. So even though she was awful the rest of the time, this moment she was great. So I'm going to talk about that and focus on that.
So doesn't that fit? There's a term, selective memory,
Where
we all have the option of remembering things kind of the way we want to remember them.
Right.
You erase the bad, you overemphasize the good. But when you create something like this, what is that a substitute for? I don't understand it. I mean,
you're just really creative and envision this perfect moment. I don't think it's weird, is it?
No,
I don't think it's weird. Well, it's definitely not weird. I think most of us do that, and most of us create a little nirvana for ourselves, and we are notoriously bad reporters of what happened when we were kids.
Yeah.
Especially somehow the good stuff, you know, like the extremes, the good stuff and the really, really negative stuff. And so part of you really, I think, up until a couple weeks ago, thought, like, I can find this place.
That's the hardest part of this is, for years, I have fooled myself into believing that this fake memory was a real memory.
Right.
And the realization that I can't go to this place, because I explained to my wife, whenever I would go there, all the guys in the courts, they knew me. They're like, Bill, you're here. Hey, we need a guy. Come play with us and stuff like that. And I said, well, I don't know why I would create that.
Well, it probably is a collection of, you know, your subconscious at work creating something ideal. It also might be an artifact of a dream that you built on over time.
I bet.
You know what I mean? So yeah. You might have had a dream when you were a kid, and it might have been a recurring dream.
I think it was.
Right? And then eventually that feels more and more real the more you experience
right.
it, even if you're experiencing it in an unconscious state.
Right.
Yeah. You had like a tennis court cheers thing going
on. It was
on.
Like cheers.
Like Bill.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's excited to see you and there's no bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is like as I was deconstructing it and trying to figure out, no, it must have been based in some reality, but it wasn't.
Poor
right.
Bill.
I changed like in this, like when I first started having it as a kid, I was in high school and then it elevated to me being in college. And then I was younger but had little kids at home to where now my kids are grown. Like I kept evolving in the dream even though...
Not in reality.
Real.
Right, but I think when we're working in our ideal, when we're creating our nirvana or our heaven, the facts are not that important. You know, the feeling is way more important than the facts, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever had a dream that you're on a major radio station with the best partner in the world?
No.
Oh!
Nothing like that, no.
Good, I'm not in your imagination.
The
it's
lob.
Real. It is sweet, though. But does this also, like, you know, there's a beach club we've gone to since I've been a baby, before I was born, and the first time I brought my husband, Jim, to it, I'm like, it's like Disneyland. Oh, my God, there are slides and high boards and low boards. And he goes, this is it. That was it to me.
Right.
And I envisioned it like Disney,
sure.
But it really wasn't. We still love it, but.
Right. Well, and I think the world looks different to us as we grow up,
I guess,
right? You
yeah.
know, when an eighth grader visits their first grade classroom, they're like, wow, I thought this was huge.
Yeah.
And look at how tiny these little desks are, you know?
When I first met my wife, the first date we ever went on, we were both talking about Christmas. Christmas was coming. It was in December, and we were both talking about our memories of Christmas as a kid. And my wife said, the happiest day of the year for me, like a lot of kids, is Christmas morning. There were six kids in her family, and she said, the magic of all six of us surrounded by these toys, just, you know, having the best time of our lives and opening up toys, it was just magical. So years later, her dad found a cassette. They had tape recorded a Christmas morning. And all you heard was screaming and punching and crying.
So it wasn't whimsical.
If you touch that, I will kill you, you know, like that kind of stuff. And she's listening to it, and her eyes just sunk. And she goes, this is nothing like what I remember.
Wow.
I remember it being so happy.
Yeah. No, I feel more for you and your wife that you decided to revisit or stumbled upon
right.
the actual thing instead of being able to live in the heaven, the
yes.
nirvana, right? And
yes.
be able to revisit that spot in your mind.
Yes.
It's like
yeah.
your dreams were shattered.
She felt so awful, and I kept laughing and going, when do we get to the part where everybody's having good? And it just never, everybody's just yelling at each other, and I will bite you. If you touch that again, I'll bite you, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
way
right.
To pile
right.
on. That's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
It is. It is.
And yet we're laughing.
And we're laughing, right. But it just shows how important certain memories are, right? Even if they're manufactured, we want to hold on to good stuff.
And we alter them to fit our needs,
absolutely.
Don't we, to some extent?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating.
It is. Thank you for hanging out extra time, John.
Thanks
really
for having me, guys.
Dr. John Duffy.
And how do people get a hold of you? Because everyone's asking.
Yeah. You can find just about everything about me at drjohnduffy.com. My podcasts are on iTunes, Better and On Purpose.
Thanks, John. More ahead. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.